This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, a Kenyan activist shares how the pain from genital cutting remains with her, and a Burundian journalist in exile keeps news alive via social media. But first, aid agencies in South Sudan are trying to provide food. Efforts are being made by the UN Children's Fund UNICEF in South Sudan to reach people in isolated areas who are said to be on the brink of catastrophe. Nearly 3 million people, or roughly a quarter of the population, require food assistance. Around 40,000 are in areas to which UN agencies have been unable to deliver aid. Tim Irwin works for UNICEF in South Sudan. Sebit William asked him how concerned the agency is.
I think probably our key concern is that there are large numbers of people, particularly in the greater Upper Nile states, which we don't have access to. These people have been displaced by the conflict. They've sought safety in areas which are inaccessible to us at the moment. And these are the people who are really facing the greatest hardship and are really looking at living in desperate conditions. So these are people that we urgently need to reach. We are able to provide food assistance to these and to other people, but what we need is safe and unrestricted humanitarian access. So that's certainly one of the main points that we're calling for in this joint statement, that if we can reach these people, we can help them. But at the moment, for security reasons, we're just not able to reach the people who are most in need.
Yes. Now, when we talk about these 40,000 people who are really, really in the brink of catastrophe, let's just give us a picture, I mean, the image of this particular food insecurity in the country.
So these are people who are eking out a living in however a way they can. They are, living in displaced in marsh areas. They're living off of, whatever fish they can catch. They're eating water lilies. And, of course, now we're in the dry season. And so, the bodies of water which are helping sustain them at the moment are going to recede. And so what we're very concerned about is that the situation is grave now, but we expect that it will get worse. And, of course, one of the other challenges is looking further ahead in the year as the wet season approaches, is the urgent need to pre-position food supplies and other forms of humanitarian assistance in those parts of the country which are going to become inaccessible once the rains hit.
Yes, in order to do your work, of rescuing this population, what must be done now?
Well, as I said, it's essential that we are given free and unrestricted access so that we are able to reach and help these people. And, of course, all three UN agencies that issued this statement obviously want to see a speedy implementation of the peace agreement so that stability can return to South Sudan, so that people who have been displaced can return, and so that humanitarian agencies such as ours have full access to those in the greatest need.
A Kenyan woman who was subjected to female genital mutilation or cutting has described how the pain of the experience has remained with her into adulthood. The practice, also known as FGM, is considered by the United Nations as a violation of the rights of women and girls. The UN estimates there are some 200 million FGM survivors around the world today. Kizia Bianca Oseko, who was cut as a young girl, has been attending an event at UN headquarters to mark the International Day of Zero Tolerance for FGM. She's been speaking to Joseph Mali.
What I remember is that day, that the way I felt, that pain that I felt is what I remember up to today. That is what it takes for me to be here today and to be standing here today and to say FGM is a human rights thing and people need to stand up and condemn it in all possible terms.
And in trying to motivate ladies, girls, and the entire society, what are the challenges?
The challenges are that you get there are these girls who you get that they come from a community where they are dominated by men. They can't stand up and speak for themselves, so they really need to listen to what their men are saying or their parents are saying. So such challenges, I just encourage girls that they should stand up. Stand up for their rights, talk, speak for their rights. Because, if you have something which is really making you feel uncomfortable, if you can't speak, you can't know. So again, that's why I'm saying that you can't grow if you're in your comfort zones. So I believe that as girls, that the biggest challenge is to come out and speak. Speak to ourselves, speak for the other girls, and speak for the world.
do you think the African, the governments, specifically African governments, are doing enough to eliminate FGM?
I don't think they're doing enough to eliminate FGM because, like, for example, where I come from, if people are doing an advertisement on media, it has to really run and run and run about this thing. So, like, now if you say about, if they're doing advertisements about, let me say, for example, about a bar soap, let's say, for example, it has to run at least after every news. But that about FGM, we only do this when maybe we are having an international day. That's when they do it, but they just put it somewhere. So if we can start with our first the media people to put FGM, like, it has to come in every news flash that FGM is bad. And now, you see, we really need to strengthen the laws that are there for us to be able to fight FGM.
What do you have to explain about alternative rite of passage? Do you see it helping the community?
Alternative rites of passage is a program that takes girls through a 1 week or 10 days program that brings around girls who have not been circumcised between the ages of 8 to 12 years. They come together, they get to share together. We talk to them about self-esteem, talk to them about feminine hygiene, talk to them about growing up, about understanding their bodies. So you get that these girls are with us for this one full week. We will explore their talents. We want to use talent to talk to the world about FGM. So these girls, are in this 1 week, you get that they have gone through talent to speak about FGM. They can speak up for them. They can stand up and speak for themselves. They have been given assertive skills for them to speak about FGM. So the whole of this program, you get that the girls now, they are done circumcision of the mind, not the real circumcision. So you see, after this holistic program has gone through, after the 7 days or the 10 days, these girls graduate. They're given certificates and they do a declaration that they're not going to go through the practice. And again, that these girls who come for this training, the parents also are trained on. So because, you know, it has to be something which is all round.
Burundi journalists in exile are continuing to cover the crisis in the troubled country using social media and mobile messaging apps. Independent radio stations in the East African nation were shut down by the authorities following a military coup attempt in May 2015. Alexandre Niyungeko, president of the Union of Burundi Journalists, spoke to me about the importance of keeping the public informed.
We have a debt regarding to the people in terms of, you know, the needs to be informed.
You also cover the refugee camps in your news bulletin.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how?
Also, very important to give information about the life in the camps in this region, Rwanda, DRC, and also Tanzania, and also Kenya and Uganda. It is also important to give a view how they are trying to face this situation honorably, because there are many activities they are doing, they are trying to be in order to survive, they are trying to be, you know, about education, about, you know, small business, to survive. That's also very important, so, you know, it can inspire others.
The independent radio stations have been closed.
Yeah.
You don't have a frequency. So how do you get your news and information to the people?
Our initiatives are, online initiatives. They are on internet, but also they are also social media. We are trying to share our programs through WhatsApp, Facebook, and other social media platforms. That's how we are trying. But it's very, I can say, just a small contribution, because the people in Burundi who have access to internet or access to those platforms are very little. So that's why we are continuing to struggle to have our programs to reach all the public in Burundi. The access of information is the right to all the public. It's an international right recognized by all the international community. So we are calling the international community to help us to serve the public in Burundi so that the access to information can be reality.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.